Hello and welcome to Muni Lowdown. My name is Paul Graves and I'm the managing editor for DebtWire Municipals. Today's episode title is Breaking the Climate Debt Doom Loop. We're exploring how climate-driven disasters strain local budgets, push governments into more borrowing, and sometimes deepen long-term fiscal risk. Joining us is Ayushi Mishra, PhD candidate and Lizzie Warner Fellow at Northeastern University, whose research focuses on climate risk, governance, and public finance. And with me is DebtWire Municipal's curation editor, Stephanie Fagnani. Stephanie, always good to have you here. Let's bring Ayushi in.
Thank you, Paul. It's always good to be here with you. And Ayushi, welcome. Welcome. It is your first time with us as a guest on the Muni Lowdown, and we are really looking forward to having this conversation with you.
Thank you.
So I think what would be best for our listeners is to lay the groundwork for why we're even having this conversation. So could you get into what we actually mean when we talk about the climate debt doom loop and why it's showing up in the municipal finance market right now?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm so excited. I actually used your podcast as part of my research, so it's a nice full circle moment for me. I can take a step back and explain how it is that we got here. I was very fortunate to be invited to a roundtable discussion at the New York Stock Exchange in 2024. When I took part in that, that's where I was first fully introduced to the municipal bond market and the role climate risk plays in this whole dynamic. And it was actually from that discussion that this paper began to develop. So it took a few months for all of us co-authors to formulate our ideas. And what came of it was this climate debt doom loop, which sounds absolutely depressing, devastating. You think everything's going to end. And while it did start like that, we did figure out ways to disrupt that doom loop. So overall, our research paper is about an opportunity for cities to take a step back and maybe rethink some of the things that they've been doing. And it's overall a great time for cities to take control of this whole climate change issue.
So Ayushi, help us understand the mechanics. How do climate impacts actually move through a city's finances? Where does the stress show up first? And how does it build into something larger?
What's most important is to understand how this whole mechanism works. So I think it's helpful to think of it as a chain reaction. So the stress, it doesn't hit the entire budget all at once. It moves through these specific pressure points. So I think the first sign of trouble is often, it shows up in the tax base, but it's subtle. It's not necessarily that property values begin to vanish overnight. Instead, what we see first is a softening, if that makes sense. So, for example, if insurance premiums begin to spike or if insurers pull back, it makes it harder for the next buyer to get a mortgage. And you might see properties staying on the market longer, or the growth in the tax base starts to slow down compared to other safer neighboring cities. That's where the first signs of stress begins to show. So it's like a slow leak in the city's primary revenue engine. And then this kind of cascades down to the cost side. And then safety nets that have historically been there have been eroding the past few years. And then finally, it reaches the bond market. And that's where things start to get really nuanced. And that's a relatively under-researched area in this whole realm of things. So that's why we wanted to focus on this area the most.
So we do know that borrowing is often necessary in recovery from climate-driven disasters. But in some cases, borrowing actually increases vulnerability rather than reducing it. Can you explain your ideas on why that happens?
Yeah, I think ultimately it's about misalignment of priorities and just misalignment of the way our structures are set up. Right now, for example, there's a major disconnect between how we finance cities and how we plan for adaptation in the long term. I think there are some reasons for it. First, there is a debt-only trap, if you will, where large-scale adaptation is incredibly expensive. So if a city relies exclusively on debt to finance these projects, the interest payments are going to impact the budget immediately. And so for a city that's already facing economic pressures, that extra debt burden can be like a tipping point for a credit downgrade sooner, even if the project was designed to save them money and safeguard them 20 years from now. So that's one thing. Another thing is we often tend to use funds for short-term recovery instead of future-proofing. And that's what we keep referring to in our paper as neglected risk. So if a city borrows to build a bridge, a flood zone, exactly the same way it broke before, they haven't actually reduced their risk at all. They've just put a little Band-Aid on the situation, and they're going to pay for an asset later on that's still vulnerable. And then another point I should bring up is because cities need to generate property taxes to pay back their bondholders, they might feel pressured to approve these high-value development projects in risky areas. So for example, luxury condos on a waterfront. So it's very often it becomes a buy now and pay later scheme, like we'll figure it out later on. So it keeps the tax base growing in the short term, but it sets the stage for potentially a massive loss of value later on. And my final point, I know it's a long answer, but there are so many socioeconomic considerations we need to keep in mind when we think about all of this. So some cities are not only exposed to higher physical climate risk, but they're also financially fragile just before all of this. So wealthier, more affluent cities might be able to absorb that small hike in interest rates, but a fiscally strained city that was already struggling might get priced out of the market entirely. We've also been seeing a shift towards blue lining, which is a modern day form of redlining, where lenders and insurers are retreating and calling these areas a no-go zone financially. So when capital gets pulled out of those areas, the city loses the ability to invest in the projects that would have made them safer. It's overall not about if a city can borrow, but it's also about the terms it borrows under and the timing and all of these little nuances. So debt is a really important tool for cities. I think what we are advocating for in our paper is for cities to consider blended finance mechanisms instead, not just debt, but other things too, but definitely utilize debt as well.
So how is the municipal market interacting with this doom loop cycle today? Are investors absorbing the risk, pricing it, or in some ways reinforcing the loop?
It's a complicated relationship. Right now, the market is playing a dual role. It's acting as a safety net, but it's also reinforcing this doom loop. And this is what the research indicates is weak and inconsistent pricing in the bonds. So surprisingly, despite all of the billion-dollar disasters we've been seeing, bond prices have been very slow to reflect climate risk. It's not to say that they're not showing it at all. It's not unpriced, it's underpriced. So for example, there have been scholarly works indicating that for cities that are facing extreme sea level rise, investors are only charging around 5 basis points. And that's just for those who might not be familiar, just 0.05%. So for every 10% increase in sea level exposure, for example, that's like akin to paying 50 cents more a year on every $1,000 you borrow. So that's one thing. So it is definitely underpriced. And the reason the pricing might be so low, and this is something I was very interested in, I want to think more about the human psychology behind these decision-making behaviors. The pricing is low because of neglected risk. Investors have a tendency to ignore high impact but infrequent events until they actually begin to happen, so much so that it's just right up in your face. So there's also a timeline mismatch. Credit rating agencies operate on a whole different timescale compared to insurance underwriters, compared to city planners, compared to all of these stakeholders. They're all doing their own thing. And because of all of this, if you compare it to climate impacts, they're usually over many decades. So because of this short-termism, the short-term behavior outlook, long-term physical risks often get either ignored or they're very discounted. It's just, you can't see it. It's not material. The climate models feel too abstract and unreliable. Climate risk is inherently uncertain because I don't know what the weather is going to be like a few weeks from now. And climate, that's a whole other story that we don't know with absolute certainty. So the most critical part of all of this is the role that credit rating agencies play, because they are almost reinforcing this loop, because they often send these mixed signals. They tend to prioritize short-termism over forward-looking climate vulnerabilities. And that's not malicious. It's just structural. It's the way that the agencies are designed. It's a 3 to 5 year rating period. So to answer your question, the market is reinforcing the loop by allowing cities to borrow cheaply right now without addressing this underlying gigantic elephant in the room, which is climate risk. But the debt being cheap is a double-edged sword because it sets the stage for a sudden, perhaps painful, abrupt repricing, which is going to be a big financial shock later on.
So over the last couple of years, we've done several different podcasts around climate, around pricing the risk. And what I'm wondering, with this climate debt doom loop that exists now, and if you had to put it on the scale of 1 to 10, what number would you give that and why? In terms of how important is it for municipalities, for federal, state, local governments to address this?
I would say a solid 5 or a 6. And the reason for that is I don't think it's too late. I think that there's time for municipalities to think things through, especially at this time of uncertainty, given that the signals indicate states need to be shouldering the burden of responsibility of climate disasters more and more. And that's been in the works for years now. The writing has been on the wall that perhaps it is up to the states to manage their own disaster recovery. I think this is a really opportunistic time for states and local governments to begin aligning their climate adaptation plans, which are always so beautiful and so ambitious, but very often are disconnected from capital planning. It's absent from their debt-making decisions. So if cities begin to align those things a little bit better, a bit more thoughtfully, that in itself can be a really big way to make actual material change. So when the time comes to justify climate adaptation projects, the city and the state has the agency to do so. Another point I wanted to bring up is the point of climate risk disclosure. I'm a huge proponent of it. I believe in standardized risk disclosure. And I think that one of the ways, again, if a city discloses climate risk, it becomes easier for the city to justify climate adaptation projects. So it's all, to me, at least in my view, a win-win. I don't think there's any loss that can come from this. If there are no hurricanes for the next 5 years, it's not like that money is getting wasted. It's just a rainy day fund, sometimes for a very rainy day with extreme precipitation events going on. But overall, I think that there are so many signals right now for states to begin considering this very seriously. Of course, this trickles down to municipalities, and you have such a great tool to utilize that other countries simply don't have, which is this municipal bond market. And this $4 trillion market now has the ability to grow by a couple trillion more. So overall, I think a 5, maybe a 6, it's not a time to overreact. I know there's a lot going on in the world. It's a really good time to begin investing and making these decisions very thoughtfully.
For investors watching this evolve, what signals help distinguish issuers using debt to build resilience from those stuck financing repeated recovery?
Yeah, I think oftentimes as humans, we get stuck looking at the disaster of it all. And instead, I think we need to rewire our thinking and start to look at the design. Why is it that we're in this situation? And in our paper, we give some markers to help separate the cities that are doing a really tremendous job. And the goal there was, instead of giving those preachy, abstract recommendations, we thought, what if we give real-life case studies of real U.S. cities that have actually done something to disrupt this doom loop? If we can show that, it sets a precedence and it allows other cities to maybe feel like, hey, maybe this isn't so risky to consider doing this. So, for example, I mentioned that climate adaptation plans are often disconnected from budgets. So San Antonio, Texas, thought about this, and now they've explicitly linked climate inaction to their credit rating and borrowing costs. So San Antonio was saying to the market, if we don't build this resilience today, our debt will be more expensive tomorrow. So that's a proactive signal for investors to look at. And then regarding disclosure, a city in Washington, Orting, they disclosed the long-term risk of volcanic lahars in their financial documents, in their bond documents. And they did it, and their bonds still sold at a premium. They weren't penalized for doing so, which again, builds investor confidence. And overall, I think one of the things that I'm most proud about in our work is we champion for what we called ordinary innovations, which is a term that I believe it's Claudia Diaz-Martinez. She's amazing. She, I think, coined that term. She had recommended ordinary innovations, and I loved that term. Ordinary innovations don't require you to reinvent the wheel. You don't have to, you know, think of these really sleek and obscure solutions. Instead, it can be voter-approved taxes like they did in San Francisco, where they approved a $12 per parcel tax specifically for adaptation. Portland, Oregon, Boulder, Colorado, they're all doing really great work. And so these innovations are ordinary and cost-effective, but they provide a really stable revenue stream that doesn't just pile on to the general debt load. So what we're saying is muni debt is really good. Keep utilizing those bonds, but perhaps also consider adopting a blended finance approach where you use all of the tools that are at your disposal. Because what's the harm in at least trying? You don't know what's going to stick. And so if you are an investor, I think that this is a great time to start paying attention to these signals because you want to win, right? You want to make money. So you should be paying attention to physical climate risk more so than you might be doing so already.
If listeners remember one idea about today's conversation, what should it be and why?
I think one of the things that is most astounding is the role the muni market plays in American infrastructure and like the whole engine of American infrastructure. I think the main takeaway is if we can rewire that engine and prioritize long-term survival over short-term box checking, like checking a box because I think this is going to upgrade my credit rating, but I'm not sure. If we keep doing that short-term approach, we don't just break the doom loop. Actually, I think that we're going to reinforce it more and more. The main goal here isn't to just make cities more insurable or marketable or have a AAA rating. It's instead to make them livable for the next century or longer. And I think this requires us to not redesign, but just to rethink our current systems design.
Ayushi and Stephanie, thanks for participating in a really great conversation today. To our listeners, if you enjoyed this episode, please like, share, comment, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Shout out to our podcast producer, Ali Curie, who always makes sure that our mics sound right. Thanks for tuning in to Muni Lowdown. See you next time.